Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, this is Justin Cavender, and I'm here with my two best friends, David and Randy. How are you doing today, David?
I will be doing great if my internet lasts throughout this podcast without turning me into a robot.
You scared me because there was a pause.
I was like, here we go.
Randy, how the hell are you?
I am fantastic. Just happy to be here with you boys.
Aw, me too. This is what
on
I look
this
forward
momentous
to.
Day.
How are you?
I'm fabulous, man. I got no complaints. I had a joyous day. I got to sleep in a little bit and relax. The people that were working on the roof are all done, so there's no more banging and shit going on throughout the day. It's exciting stuff. They only do it when I'm off, you see. When I'm at work, I don't hear anything. But when I'm home trying to sleep, they are whacking away at the roofs, and I hate it.
Well, I'm glad they're done.
Yeah, me too. It was awful. I don't know if you've ever had roofers your area, but it's bad news bears, man. It's like, dude, how many holes are you putting on my roof, man?
It is better than a leaky roof.
That is true. But I don't know if there's any leaks until it rains. That's the only problem.
Well, fortunately, it always rains here.
That's true. It always rains here. Let's see here. Speaking of when it rains, it pours. Raven Calitri style. Let's talk about Disney buying 20th Century Fox for some serious Dr. Evil money. What's it up to now? Like $60 billion? Is that where we're at?
$60 billion.
And they hope to regain all... Yeah. So they can actually regain all of that billions with the Fantastic Four franchise alone. Does that sound fair?
I thought you were going to go with the original editions of the Star Wars trilogy, but
no.
Fantastic Four. We're going to Phase Four. Fantastic Four makes total sense.
Right? It does. It makes perfect sense. I'm looking forward to it.
They can put Hugh Jackman right into Avengers 3.
What? That could work. That's
if this deal closes anytime soon, they'll do a reshoot to get Wolverine into Avengers Infinity War.
Okay, so let's just pretend that this deal goes through. And now Disney, who wanted to have their own little digital platform, would they just use Hulu's name to do their little streaming service, since that is part of Disney and 21st Century Fox? Do you think that's possible?
So Disney would... Disney would own 30% of Hulu. They wouldn't own the outright, so I believe they would still continue forward with their plans of creating their own digital platform.
Ah, okay, good. Because I don't think Hulu's all that great. It drives me insane just because it always just has some sort of weird technical glitch when I'm watching shit. And that doesn't matter what streaming device I use, there's always some sort of hiccup. And I have like 200 megabyte download speed, so it's not my internet. All you people crying out there and screaming at your radios. I spared no expense. It's just Hulu sucks. Fat penis. But I don't know. I guess I'm excited about it.
You don't hear a lot about Hulu anymore.
No, I don't. I'm not a fan. I canceled it. Done with it. What say you? Are you excited about this sort of buyout?
I am excited at the prospect of being able to get original theatrical versions of the original trilogy, and maybe even having the 20th Century Fox fanfare at the beginning, since Disney will kind of own that. But really, it's just kind of their backlog that Disney is going to own, right? It's not going to be – they're not monopolizing and completely taking over the entirety of the studio, or am I misunderstanding that?
They will own they'll own the studio. They will be 20th Century Fox's film distribution wing. 20th Century Fox will retain their television rights, you know, Fox TV, FX, Fox News, all of that stuff. But yeah, they will own the backlog and the properties currently owned by 20th Century Fox, to where 20th Century Fox, the studio, that we know and love will cease to be.
So, does that mean the Avatar, James Cameron's going to be working with Disney?
It does, which is a perfect mix because there's already an Avatar land in the Wild Kingdom Park in Florida.
Interesting.
Synergy, Justin. It's all about synergy.
Synergy. Teddy K. My man, Teddy K. Yeah. Synergy.
I mean, but it also depends on how they structure. If they leave 20th Century Fox to be their own entity still, so if they allow it to maintain their corporate structure and it just becomes, you know, a new division of Disney, I think that this isn't a terrible move. If they bring it into the fold and treat it like another property like Marvel or Star Wars or Pixar, I think this could be bad on several levels. First of all, Disney would never have made Deadpool, you know, or Logan. They've been very staunch that they aren't in the business of making R-rated comic book movies or R-rated movies in general. And so Fox, for all of its innumerable faults with handling a Fantastic Four and some of the X-Men films, has done a really good job of creating unique genre entertainment, you know, be it with Planet of the Apes, with Logan, with Deadpool. They're really separating themselves from the pack as far as, you know, genre filmmaking. Disney, through Marvel, they're going to make 3 Marvel movies over the next couple, every year for the next couple years. If Fox is a subsidiary of Disney and not their own entity, they don't have the corporate infrastructure to also, on top of that, make the 2 to 3 movies, the 20 comic book movies that 20th Century Fox would make. So we will get less comic book movies. Again, you know, we obviously don't know what these deals are. They could structure it in a way to where they maintain a hierarchy over 20th Century Fox, and while they're under the general umbrella of Disney, they're able to operate as like an autonomous studio with funding and support from Disney. If that happens, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that happens, that's great. Otherwise, you know, losing a studio is bad because, you know, that's one less studio making films. I think every filmmaker in the world has fantasized about having that, you know, 20th Century Fox fanfare before their films.
Sure.
I mean, to where if that goes away, that would be very sad. You know, it's definitely on my life list of goals. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see if it goes through, how it goes through, and what that'll mean for both studios going forward.
Everyone's fired.
Yeah, exactly. They could do that. Disney could be like, we have our infrastructure, we're going to clean house, and we're going to appoint, you know, a new studio head, and then a couple people under them, and build out a staff and produce, you know, 3 to 4 movies a year. That they could just be, we want your back catalog.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And for you not to compete with us in the theatrical market.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think it's a good thing. I'm not worried about it. Numbers don't lie. People, at least when it comes to these genre films that we are fans of, I think that Disney would be smart about that and just let it be. What is that other company that always says they're already, like Touchstone, right? That's Disney. We talked about that like a couple weeks ago. There are other companies that have the adult programming that Disney is affiliated with. I don't think that's going away. It would be silly to fill that well with sand when it's a very well, you know, tapped resource. So it just seems silly. But I am not worried about it, to say the least. What does worry me, though, at least concerns me, piques my interest even, is Tarantino and Star Trek. This was all news to me up until about like 10 minutes ago when you hit me with some pretty big bombs that Tarantino has pitched an idea to Paramount about a Star Trek idea. And while I think that is fascinating, I love every Tarantino movie. I even enjoy Death Proof, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. I don't know how things would be run on the Enterprise in a Tarantino universe, especially if it's all crazy like frame story thing where you got the end and then the middle and then the beginning, or the beginning then the end then the middle. I don't know, just weird shit going on, and F-bombs and N-words. I don't know if there's a place for that in Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely not.
Yeah, just because Tarantino is going to be taking over or might be in for one film doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to carry a lot of those tropes that we associate with
right.
Tarantino. So, you know, like dropping F-bombs and
this is fun to think about
and stuff like that. Yeah, it is interesting. Like, what kind of movie would that turn into? But hell, I would love to see a fresh take on a Star Trek movie. I've really enjoyed the previous three that we've got in this modern era, this modern reboot era. Yeah, why not?
Why not? Right? Spice it up.
Just don't let them touch Star Wars.
I hate this idea, but not for the reason that I think most people will think. I think the idea of a Tarantino Star Trek movie could be great, but Tarantino is one of the few unique voices. You know, he only makes a movie every couple years, and I would much rather see him create something original that's wholly Tarantino, wholly unique, as opposed to living in someone else's sandbox. I could definitely see him maybe coming in as a producer. He had mentioned, you know, taking themes from the original series, from episodes like City on the Edge of Tomorrow, you know, where people volunteer to be killed when a computer pulls their number. I could see him doing something interesting where he would produce it, and maybe like it would be a great way for him to bring on maybe like a protege, you know, Lawrence Benson, partner forever. You know, maybe the two of them want to bring someone else into the fold, and this could be their way of kind of tapping in a new director and kind of guiding them through the pitfalls of Hollywood. And it's interesting that he brought Abrams on board. I guess Tarantino pitched it to Abrams, and Abrams was like, we have to make this movie, and went to Paramount, who apparently was also over the moon for it. I think at this point, this is fun. Tarantino is notorious for having Final Cut approval. You know, he has say-so over marketing. He is one of the few creators out there that has total control over the product that he produces, and I don't know how he would work within a system of a Star Trek machine.
Right.
I just would love to a original, unique sci-fi take from Quentin Tarantino as opposed to Quentin Tarantino's take on Star Trek.
That's a lot of work, David. You gotta do world building and make all these new characters and flying ships and things. No one wants that.
I'm pretty sure that's something that that gets Mr. Tarantino off.
Yeah. I like... You know what's funny is, I'm with you, Randy. I really enjoyed these last three Star Trek movies. I even like In the Darkness. I'm one of the few people on the planet that didn't have a problem with it. And I actually like the idea of the role reversal between Spock and Kirk. I thought it was way more fitting, and it really showed Spock's human side to get so angry and sad about losing his friend. And it really showed a vulnerable side to him that we don't get too often. And I was 100% okay with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And while we're on the topic of Star Trek, I'm going to slightly take a little bit of a tangent and say that I am all caught up on Discovery.
Oh, yeah. Does it get better?
It does get better. It actually gets pretty good. So I'm afraid I've got to eat my words from a few episodes back when I was talking about how shitty it was. I still think Orville is a better Star Trek series, or at least it feels a lot more fun to me. It's way more Next Generation, and Discovery is way more J.J. Abrams, Kelvin universe Trek, but... yeah, it does get better. So if any of you have maybe only watched the first episode or two and you're on the fence as to whether or not to keep going with it, I would actually recommend keep going. It does get better.
David and I spent our afternoon talking about this show, and those are the exact words of everyone else that loves the show. After episode two, it gets better.
Yeah.
You're not alone in this universe.
Yes. 12 hours ago, I was arguing with Mr. Rod Faulkner from the Seven Matrix on the Everything Geek podcast about this very subject.
Really?
But it's okay. Everything he says is devalidated because he said Thor Ragnarok was, like, awful. So.
Oh, yeah, he didn't like Thor. Rod, you're crazy. Crazy town banana pants.
But I did end my argument with him saying that I would happily watch this rest of this season, you know, that Enterprise was the same way it's at the beginning, but it became one of my favorite Trek series, and that I was not giving up on the show, just that I was not impressed with what they put forward first.
Oh.
And Randy, do they definitively show any kind of proof of which universe they're in, be it Prime or Kelvin? Because I remember Brian Fuller assured us that this was going to take place in the Prime universe, the original universe, but everything that I've seen looks really, really like it takes place in the Abrams Kelvin verse.
Everything about it screams Kelvin. But they don't really say. And the
they just say, well, wow, this Prime universe is pretty sweet.
Right. Well,
how do they word it?
There's no clearly defined anything that would point in that direction. But I mean, if you look at the technology, for example, Enterprise was the last series made before this one, and the technology was made to look like it could have progressed, you know, or it could have been before the 60s series, right? It was still kind of cool and still kind of high-tech, but still low-tech looking. This, there's no pretense of looking low-tech to segue into the 60s Star Trek. This is all J.J. Abrams style, super sleek, sexy, lens flares from wall to wall. It's, I mean, visually, the style is very much J.J. Abrams. The style of the uniforms, very much so. This takes place before. I don't know how much you guys know about it. I don't know how much you want to know about the series. But the character that we follow, Michael, is Spock's adopted sister.
Yeah.
So she would be roughly the same age, if not a little bit older than Spock. So that's what time period we're in. Doesn't look like the 60s Trek TV show. So I'm going with Kelvin Universe.
Oh,
right, they even had those little, like, learning pods that they had in the Abramsverse, where you see Spock in the fight with the one guy.
Oh, yes, yes.
The first episode, yeah. Michael is studying in one of those pods when Sarek befriends her.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, and just to add, you know, you mentioned Star Trek, the series Star Trek Enterprise, and you also went on record saying that Captain Jonathan Archer is your favorite captain.
I love him. That's on video.
I know.
I did not lie to Mr. Bakula.
No, you professed your love to his character. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I love him. He's the perfect meld of Kirk and Picard.
Yes. You have a cardboard cutout with his mouth hole open. And it is amazing.
Yes, because in my fantasy, he is definitely not the pitcher. He's definitely the catcher.
Oh.
Yowza.
Oh, my. Speaking of Yowza, that's what I say when I see dinosaurs. And tomorrow being Thursday, we get the premiere for the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer. There have been teases for the teaser and a nice little featurette talking to the different actors and what's involved and a couple of fun little scenes. And I gotta tell you, just seeing the dinos again got me all sorts of excited.
And seeing Goldblum.
Yeah, Goldblum is like in a courtroom. It's like, here I am talking about dinosaurs again. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and they released some plot details, too, about what the general story is going to be. I guess they're going to return to Isla Nublar because it's worked so well before.
Nublar? I hardly know her.
but they're going back to save the dinosaurs, those creatures that tried to murder them numerous times. I guess there's a volcano on the island that has become active and is going to wipe out all the dinosaurs on said island.
No.
And so Claire's, Dice Brown's, Dice Bryce Dallas Howard's
Andrew Dice Clay.
Claire, yeah. She has formed an organization to protect the dinosaurs, and I guess they're going to try to get them off island, because that worked really well in The Lost World.
Mm-mm.
And
this is straight up that you cannot avoid your fate. They were put down by meteors and volcanoes and the end of the world, and now it's going to happen again. There's no escaping your destiny, David.
Good. Let them die.
That's so sad.
They're not real. They're genetically altered. You got the embryos.
They are real. They have feelings.
But they did promise us that this was the Jurassic Park with... the Jurassic movie with the most dinosaurs, both practical and computer-generated. So it's promising us more dinosaurs than we've ever seen before, which that alone excites me.
I'm just glad we're apparently not getting the tactical dinosaurs that can speak English and carry machine guns. Because I keep hearing rumors ever since after Jurassic Park 3. Oh, yeah, the next Jurassic Park movies, they're going to be wearing goddamn body armor, speaking English, smoking cigarettes, and firing machine guns. I'm like, fuck you.
That's Did you ever so see the concept rad. Art we posted?
Yeah.
We posted?
Dude, yeah. I really liked the Triceratops walking on its hind legs. That was so cool.
That is like ripped out of my nightmare.
It's like holding that little girl's hand or something like that.
Oh, my God. No.
Oh, man. I would take that in a heartbeat. I think that's so badass.
I'm hoping that the movie starts and Owen, Chris Pratt's character, and his raptors are on like some kind of mission in like Afghanistan or something like that.
The Taliban of Afghanistan.
Exactly.
I don't know. I'm excited. I didn't really care for Jurassic World all that much, but it's just something about seeing what looks like real dinosaurs on my TV that gets me all riled up.
Yeah, I have nothing against Jurassic World. It's just was kind of a forgettable film. Like it wasn't anything that had like, you know, obviously the first Jurassic Park was just awe-inspiring. It didn't have that same feel. It was just kind of cool to live in that world for 2 hours, but in the end it was just kind of like, all right. That was a thing.
Yeah, and there's always some next bigger and badder dinosaur. That's, like, bigger than the T-Rex, but not really. Like, that's what everybody comes to see. Is that we all want to see the T-Rex. And then they show us this other monster that's not... It's supposed to be neat because it can be camouflage, and it can fly and walk through walls, but really we just want to see the goddamn T-Rex.
Yeah. There was a video ripping it apart, like... when they go into the Indominus Rex's cage because, like, they can't see it, but then, like, Claire gets on the call for, like, 2 seconds and finds out that it's still in the cage. You would have thought they would have done that safety check before they went down in the attic.
Yeah. They have a small talent pool there. But, like, you know, it's weird. Like, even with, like, Godzilla, I don't care how neat they make the monster that Godzilla's going to be fighting. I just want to see... Godzilla. That's no matter everyone else is a second rate character. It's all about Godzilla. So and in Jurassic Park, for me, if it's not Goldblum, it is the T-Rex.
Yeah, and then we see the T-Rex in one of the teasers, and also in the featurette. You know, it looks like they've got a T-Rex.
Mm-hmm. That's what we want. That is what...
It was also a fun video. Did you see Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt like on set, but then all of a sudden it was like actually they were in the movie Jurassic Park and they had to like escape, and it was Bryce Dallas Howard had to like navigate like, oh, it's a Unix system. So it was like totally like old school, like a computer and stuff.
Oh yeah.
It was fun. It was on the tweeters.
They got CD-ROM.
Yeah. Hack the planet.
Yeah, hack the planet. Okay, so, Randy, do you have anything to add? Are you excited?
I am super excited, and I don't have anything to add.
Okay, fair enough. In the notes here, it says Justice League space original screening. What
double space.
What does that mean?
So, Justice League was screened about a year ago with incomplete effects, and then it was also screened about 4 months ago with incorporating some of the reshoots as well as some completed effects. And so people who had seen those original screenings are now reporting what's different between what we saw versus what they saw, because they, for the original version they saw was almost 3 hours long. And so there was a lot of other information involved. And now that it's coming out, people are starting to get kind of miffed because it seems like some of the stuff they cut is pretty good stuff and doesn't really make a lot of sense of why they cut it. Obviously, a lot of the stuff had to do with character building. You know, obviously, Cyborg, Aquaman, and The Flash didn't get a ton in the way of character building because they're saving that for their own solo films. The problem being is that since we haven't seen those solo films, we don't really give two shits about them at this point. Justin and I were talking earlier. I know that there's a very compelling story in there for Cyborg, and we got bits and pieces of it with his dad, Miles Dyson. And while that's cool, I think that had we gotten a movie where we saw that on a larger scale, it would have been a bigger deal when Cyborg hates his dad and like saves his dad and all that stuff. But here's some of the highlights of what was cut. There was a longer scene of the movie opened with Bruce Wayne recruiting Aquaman like we see in the film. It happens mostly the way we saw it. It's just the scene was a little bit longer, and Aquaman, it really, really highlighted the fact that Aquaman was really shut off from both Atlantis and the bulk of humanity. There was a bunch of deleted Barry Allen scenes, one with Iris West. There was a scene where Batman encounters two Green Lanterns, Kilowog and someone else, and so there was a little more Green Lantern thing. That scene where we see that epic battle between Steppenwolf and the Atlanteans and the Amazonians and the Greek gods and all that, I guess there was actually like dialogue in that scene that kind of set it up a little bit better. What else was there? We get a little more Steppenwolf. We actually, instead of him just trying to create these three mother boxes to destroy humanity, he was trying to assemble the three mother boxes to resurrect his mother. So with his mother at his side, they would be able to defeat Darkseid. Like, his goal wasn't to appease Darkseid by destroying the world. He was trying to resurrect, you know, because with the new gods and Darkseid and all that, it's all highly incestual.
Do we know mama looks like, or who his mama is?
His mom's name's Hegra.
Is this like a kangaroo situation where he's like in her little pooch?
But it was going to be reversed. She's older, so she's going to go in his pooch.
Oh, okay. It's like in the second Hunger Games movie where the guy's carrying the old lady.
Exactly.
I hate that.
And so he was going to, his goal was to destroy Darkseid. And he was the one who resurrected Superman. You know, Steppenwolf was going to get that
as an ultimate weapon type of thing.
And there was going to be a scene that played out kind of like Batman's vision in Batman v Superman, where he goes into the nightmare and he sees evil Superman just doing bad shit in the name of Apocalypse or name of Darkseid on Apocalypse.
See, I think that could be good. That sounds nice to me. I like the sound of this.
We were going to get that. There was going to be, Alfred was going to have a kind of like a bigger scene where he like kind of sized up the new superheroes, to where he kind of gave his reactions, and him and Bruce were going to have a fun little thing. Also, in the middle of the film, Deathstroke was going to break Lex Luthor out of prison. You know, we got the post-credit scene where Luthor's already out of prison, but we were going to actually get Deathstroke breaking Lex Luthor out of prison. And Luthor is in Arkham, so we were going to get a whole slew of bat cameos. Jared Leto filmed for a day, and there was going to be all these other iconic bat characters that were going to be in there that would have just helped, I think, fill out the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wouldn't have had much plot wise, but it would have been pretty cool to see, you know, the Joker, the Riddler, Penguin, Catwoman, whoever, Harley Quinn. You know, you could have thrown her and stuff like that. It also played heavier on the themes of Batman's guilt towards, you know, basically killing Superman or his part in Superman's death. It played on that trope heavy so that when Superman was confronting Batman, you saw the reason he hated him. And then there was, let's see, I guess Kevin Costner filmed for a day. I guess he was kind of had a Batman v Superman level cameo. You know, he's on Batman v Superman on top of the mountain for like 2 seconds. I guess there was another one of those. I mentioned the two Green Lanterns. Wow. But yeah, so I guess
a whole nother movie.
Yeah. I mean, basically it's come out that all of the Superman stuff in this cut, almost none of it were in the original cuts.
Wow. And
Superman was the villain. He redeemed himself. He came back, but nothing you see in this movie with a couple of very small exceptions was in the original film. This is all part of the retooling of Batman or of Justice League.
And wasn't it supposed to be a Justice League Part 1 and Part 2 kind of thing? Or am I daydreaming? Because this sounds like a long movie.
So, yeah, it was. So this all was still Justice League Part 1.
Oh.
But originally, it was going to be Part 1 would end, and it would kind of lead into Darkseid Return. I guess Darkseid, the graphics weren't complete, but Darkseid showed up in the final post-credit scene.
Oh.
And kind of teased that he was going to be the big bad of the next movie, as opposed to how Justice League ended, to where it kind of leads you to think they might be going in a different direction with the Injustice League or the Hall of Doom. Legion of Doom.
Hall of Doom. It's the Hall of Justice.
yeah, Hall of Justice, Legion of Doom, the Super Friends. So having heard this, I'll put it to both you, Justin and Randy. Are you disappointed at the product you saw based off of what you heard that they had cut? Does it add more credence to Steppenwolf as a legitimate villain? And would those character scenes have made you care a little bit more about the new characters, Justin?
I think so. But, I mean, if people saw it and didn't like it, then that's just something, too. I mean, it's not like they took one person's opinion, right? It was multiple people saw it and said, well, that's not exactly what we're looking for. It sounds intriguing. On paper, it sounds fantastic. But I guess it didn't work out. I am curious about it. Like, when you're telling me all this stuff, it seems like it would have been a fun read and a marvelous little trade paperback. But sadly, I will never see it.
Yeah, we will never see it. What about you, Randy? Did you end up seeing Justice League?
No, I have not.
You just watched Batman v Superman like 2 weeks ago, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a little slow on the uptake. But I don't know. It sounds like that would have been a hell of a movie, and I would have loved to have seen a lot of that mixed maybe with what's in there currently. But I know it had kind of an artificial time cap put on by the studio, so I don't think that did anybody any favors from the sound of it. But
And it sounds like they also would have had to. It's a lot more work because they didn't all have their little origin story or their own standalone movie to help build into this one thing after another and lead up to all this stuff. They didn't have to cram it all into one movie. It could have been over the course of, you know, five movies.
Right, and there's also rumblings that some people wanted to push the film to January, because January is kind of a dead zone for films, and so this would have been a movie that would have been able to stand out and probably would have performed better in January. Problem is that AT&T is in the process of acquiring Time Warner, and their performance bonuses would not have kicked in because they need to finish this fiscal year. And so a lot of people are pointing to Sugiharo, who's the CEO of Warner Brothers, that he wanted to make sure that he had another big film in the can by the end of the year, so that it would inflate his bonus for 2017 before they had to restructure their bonuses in 2018 to align with the merger of AT&T.
That sounds about right.
So there you have it.
And then they got people like Randy that doesn't even go to the motion picture show to see the DC movies.
How was the removal of the mustache? Could you guys really tell in those scenes with Superman? Was it bad? Because I saw an interesting thing on social media.
Because you know it's there. If no one had told you ever that they digitally removed his mustache, you would never know. But because you know that someone digitally removed the mustache, you're really looking at it. So
I saw this really interesting little graphic somebody made on social media, and it's like, okay, which CG was worse? And it's like The Rock is the Scorpion King from The Mummy 2. Fucking Jabba the Hutt from the 1997 Star Wars Special Edition. And had a couple other things. And then the other one was Henry Cavill's CG upper lip from,
it's not
from
that
Justice
bad.
League. And this the image that they showed, it just looked like a, like somebody just took a shot of the screen with their cell phone or something like that. Yeah. It looked pretty bad. Just from a still, it looked like he had this weird like hair lip thing going on.
Well, they just didn't have enough time to perfect it. I mean, it's on par with, I'd say, like Tarkin, you know, to where, you know, if you know, you didn't know Peter Cushing was dead, you know, you might have bought that was actually him there. But since you know he's dead, you know that's not real. You know, you're looking at it with a different eye. Same thing with Superman. You know that he has a mustache that they've removed, so you're staring at it and you notice it.
Right, and he always has such like a clean cut face, so it is weird. Just the idea of just picturing him with a mustache—it's funny to me. He looks great with facial hair, but. It is what it is.
Yeah, like it's the, you'll notice it because you know that it's there. But if you like, your wife, my wife, you know, my kids, you know, they didn't notice because they don't know what they're looking for.
Yeah,
he's a badass.
Yeah, which is a shame because yeah, he is. Superman is great in this movie. Like he's like the Superman that I know and love and that I want to see. And so he kind of gets a pass. Like I didn't even list that as like my detriment because like Superman is so good in this film. I mean, he's not in it that much, but when he's in it, he really shines.
It would have worked out if he was the bad guy, because then they could have kept the facial hair like in the Bizarro world. Yeah.
Did a little mirror action.
Funny. Anywho, moving on. Bryan Singer next in the notes because. He was fired from the Queen biopic. This has been a movie that has had its ups and downs since the get-go. We know that Bryan Singer and what's the guy's name? Rami Malek? Is that his name?
Yes. From Mr. Robot.
Yes. They have been fighting on set, and then freaking Bryan Singer hasn't been around. And Bryan Singer being he, said that... Ultimately, he was having to deal with his health issues with his parents, and then that caused him to have health issues, and Fox was unwilling to accommodate time away from the movie, and so he was fired.
Correct. As opposed, what Bryan Singer said.
Yeah, as opposed to the speculation of on-set arguing and even take it a step further with sexual misconduct that he's been following Bryan Singer for years.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's been several reports, prior to the movement of, pointing out the douchebags and the terrible people in the industry, and Bryan Singer's name's come up several times in the past. I remember we talked about it probably a year ago. But according to all sides, this isn't that case. I guess Bryan Singer is notorious for doing this. I guess he's on several films in the past, has just not shown up and relied on other people to direct part of his film. So for like two or three days, the DP on Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen biopic, has directed the film.
That's crazy.
So apparently they have like days left, like less than 2 weeks left of shooting. And Bryan Singer just didn't come back, and he wasn't communicative. Everyone's got family. We have emergencies, but at your job, if something happened to one of your parents, knock on wood, you would let your work know, hey, I can't come into work the next couple of days. My blank is ill, or right. I have to take care of my blank. And if he didn't do it, he has no one to blame. If he just expects them to just hold off on production, especially if he has a history of this, and rumor is that, in the contract negotiations, they basically told him, like, hey, I don't want no shenanigans this time. And he gave him shenanigans, and they let him go. Sucks.
It's fired.
You're fired, Bryan Singer.
Yeah. I used to like Bryan Singer.
He gave us the best Superman movie.
And X2.
And X2. Suspects going to be with you. I mean, and usual. I mean, Usual Suspects.
Sure,
I mean,
that put him on the map.
Yeah, I mean, he's an incredibly talented filmmaker. I mean, there's no doubting that. It's just
got to show up.
Yeah,
and quit touching people all the time.
Allegedly.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, no. If you're touching people, don't be a fucker. Stop it.
Yeah.
Unless these people want to be touched.
Right. Speaking of touching people, House of Cards. It is now its final season. It is not going to feature Kevin Spacey in any way, shape, or form. And it's a shortened season, correct?
Yeah, eight episodes as opposed to 13.
Okay, fair enough. So we get to see Robin Wright be a badass and hopefully run the country and be amazing at it. Or die trying. How do you think this show's going to end?
Oh, wow. I hope that she writes the ship and it's like one last fuck you to Frank Underwood / Kevin Spacey. But obviously it wouldn't be a very interesting show if she just showed up and, oh, everything's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that there's some kind of fallout. I mean, obviously I don't want to see Kevin Spacey on frame, but I'm hoping they can use his disappearance as a plot device that can... they can really put stuff into motion.
Sure. I mean, he was under investigation. He was very well going to go to jail. So it makes sense that he's just going to disappear. It is upsetting because we had talked about this multiple times in that the Underwoods are always at their best when they're working together to get what they want. And it's never going to be the case ever again. So hopefully Claire can get what she wants and make it out alive and on top at the end of the show. I don't want to see her go down. She was pretty terrible at the beginning. You know, she said some pretty hateful things to different characters. Remember there was that one pregnant woman that was working for her company?
Yeah.
She was very, very mean to her. So I wouldn't be surprised if she got... wronged in some way, but I think they'll find a way to make her the hero and just sort of be a strong, powerful woman that we can look up to and have a happy ending.
Yeah, I think this is the right move for Netflix. You know, a lot of people were concerned when they closed down that it was going to cost a lot of people their jobs and that they, you know, if... In a world that that's not a concern, I could have seen them just saying that, like, well, five's the end of the road, and that's just how the show ends. They didn't have to come back and finish six, but I'm glad they did. You know, now they'll get a decent amount of buzz because people want to see how it plays out, how they're going to get rid of Frank. So they can ride this controversy for, you know, they can make some good out of it. And it's just exciting. I love Robin Wright, and... I think she's amazing, and I have a thing for badass women, and she's a badass woman.
What about you, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it quite a bit before, and I was just hoping that there would be some way to rectify the story, just to do something to bring it back and to end it well, and it sounds like they have listened to their fans, or maybe they listened to this podcast. Either way, I'll take it as a victory. And I'm glad that we're going to see some resolution with the characters. And it could be interesting to see what they're going to do to write off Kevin Spacey's character, especially how last season ended. So I'm really kind of curious to see if they're going to use any of the footage that they already shot with them. I know that everything that we've been reading says, that season six is going to be Spacey-free. But, I mean, they got to do something with them.
Yeah, he walks in a room and it explodes or something.
Yeah,
I agree with you. They have to have something. It can't just be like someone throws out a newspaper and it's like Underwood dead. You know, I think they have to have. He doesn't have to have lines. He doesn't have to do anything that would denote them giving him a role. He just needs to exist to be basically killed. As terrible as that sounds, but he's an awful person. So, allegedly.
No alleged. Truth be told. Speaking of alleged, let's talk about Masters of the Universe and this allegedly getting made. This is a movie that just can't get off the ground. It hasn't been off the ground since 1987 by your good buddies over at, what is it, Canon?
Canon.
Canon. films. Anywho, now David Goyer, the man behind the Dark Knight trilogy, as far as writing goes,
right.
He has supposedly even wrote most of the script for Masters of the Universe, and it even had a release date of December 18th, 2019. So we are really just 2 years away from this motion picture show, and they can't seem to keep a director in the chair. It's a little scary. It's fun to talk about. We've seen some very cool concept art come from this camp. I shared with you guys that shot of Battle Cat that looked really, really cool. It's like some straight-up Avatar technology, and if it were to be in that vein, something as incredible and fantastical as the world of Pandora transformed into Eternia, I would get behind that in a second. Some of the coolest shit about He-Man is the monsters, the architecture, the world building. Finding a way to make Prince Adam and He-Man look cool is a little hard. Dolph Lundgren certainly tried it. I got behind it when I was a child. But I, as much as I want to see this movie be made, I do not think it'll ever happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to happen next December because that release date was set before Star Wars moved to December.
Yeah, and, that release date was set in 1988, a year after Masters of the Universe.
And David S. Goyer is, I mean, it, probably his best-known film is Blade Trinity, which is not a particularly good movie.
What?
And he's a fine writer.
You don't like that movie? I mean, that had Blade Ryan Trinity? Reynolds be buff and cool in that movie.
Yeah, it's got Triple H in it. It's got Jessica Biel in it. I'm not complaining about the cast. Just the execution.
Randy and I like it.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
No, but, it is true. We talked about it in the bone jar. We like the movie. Okay.
Well, I mean, between David S. Goyer, before that it was Mick G, who is like a less talented Zack Snyder. And then before that was John M. Chu. And I forget who was before John M. Chu, but I mean, these could not be less exciting filmmakers to bring. It just shows the priority for Sony is not Masters of the Universe. They don't seem to be going for the top the best of the best of the best with honors.
I don't think it's possible. I think this is a franchise that is not worth anyone's time anymore. It is straight up member berries.
Well, but I think it also shows what the budget they're looking to. I mean, clearly this isn't something they're looking to spend $80 million on. If they're looking to spend that kind of money, they wouldn't be going for David S. Goyer.
It reminds me of Hercules, when, like, you know how there was, like, a Rock Hercules, and then there was that other one with that Twilight guy, and they were both kind of released around the same time, and one had way more money behind it than the other, and it didn't work out.
Because they were both terrible.
They were both terrible. What was the one... Kellan Lutz? And then he's actually in talks to play He-Man, for crying out loud. And he's a failed Hercules. That's scary.
It is.
Especially
with
when
David
someone,
S. Goyer directing.
Like when Chris Hemsworth would make a much cooler He-Man. I mean, it's the same idea as like Thor, but fucking He-Man. It wouldn't work out. I mean, he would be crazy to take the role, but I mean, I see him more as a He-Man than Kellan Lutz.
Yeah, I mean, that would show the star power, but that would be an more expensive movie, and you know, it appears that that's not what Sony's looking for.
Yeah, Sony wants to spend $10 USD.
Yeah,
with marketing.
But you know, David S. Goyer, I mean, he can whip out a good treatment. I mean, he's Nolan's guy and stuff like that. You know, so, I mean, he could razzle dazzle a studio with a treatment, you know, and say, hey, we're going to do this, this, and this. And, you know, like you said, Justin, some of that concept art, it's pretty incredible, you know, to where I could see it very easily being something that's exciting in pre-production. And then once they get, like, a line producer or some money or number cruncher out there to say, like, well, you know, this is going to cost X amount. It's going to take this much. We need these locations. These are the requirements. Sony could be like, well, maybe we're not in the Master of the Universe game after all.
Right. That would be awful. Randy, what about you? You want He-Man?
I never really grew up as a fan of He-Man. It was kind of out of my age range, so I don't really have a horse in the race. But anything's going to be better than the original 80s movies.
Oh, bite your tongue. That movie is a treasure.
Yeah, I got Gwildor.
I mean, they nailed Skeletor.
Yeah, Skeletor's pretty good. Even Lin was pretty good, too. Yeah. And then the principal from Back to the Future.
Strickland,
yeah. He was a fun addition.
He was. Courtney Cox is in it.
And Paris from fucking Star Trek Voyager.
Yep. Robert Duncan O'Neill, what was that his name?
I don't know. Kevin. Boyfriend Kevin was his name. Yeah. I'll take it. Yeah. It's like a Japanese synthesizer. When really it's the cosmic key. That's one thing that really grinds my gears. It's you have this amazing world of Eternia, and they say, well, I'll tell you what. We will spend 5 minutes on Eternia and 90 minutes on Earth. It'll be great.
Right.
Trust me.
That and Skeletor's Rogues Gallery. I mean, Skeletor's got like a trillion minions. You didn't need to create up 4 new ones. I mean, Beastman was fine. You know, wasn't the Beastman I thought of. Evil-Lyn was cool. Skeletor was cool. But you need like Blade and that lizard guy and whoever the weird guy with the slick back white hair. You know, you didn't need those guys.
No.
Nope, it could have been Lockjaw and
they made
Man.
They made, yeah. His name's like Faker or something like that. Blue
probably
He-Man.
Without E.
Yeah, it's like Fake Gore and Skunk Ore.
There you go.
Moss Man. Ram Man, yeah. The bird guy. Stratos? Was that his name? Stratos?
Yeah, Stratos was the good guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, all kinds of fun characters that they just did not bring to life. They actually made action figures of some of those Masters of the Universe characters from the motion picture show.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
But those go for a bunch on eBay now.
Yeah, a bunch of nothing.
There's probably like 2 in existence.
Yeah. Next on your little list here, I see Infinity War trailer, but I feel like we talked about that last week. Did we not?
No, it came out the day after that we didn't, right? Didn't come out the day after we podcasted?
Oh, maybe.
Or was that 2 weeks ago?
I feel like that was 2 weeks ago. I don't know. It looks exciting. I'm excited. We can talk about it again for a second. But
yeah, I don't think we did because I don't think, you know, because the first time I had expressed my concern was on the Everything Geek podcast. And so I think that my only concern, I think it looks great. Everything is awesome. It's just that I think that they may have shown a little too much.
Oh.
But I think for a movie like this, it's kind of like Star Wars marketing. Everyone is going to go see Star Wars, you know, to where the marketing is really just to get you excited and to remind you like, oh, it's 2 weeks away. I better get excited. To where you really don't need to show a lot. You just have to show that Star Wars is coming back, or in this case, the Avengers are coming back, because everyone's going to be like, oh, I like the Avengers. I'm going to go see it. And so I don't think he needed to show like things like Winter Soldier. You know, it's great that he's in the movie, but it would have been nice to like, you know, that to be kind of a surprise, or that to be something they explore in Black Panther, you know, since he is in Wakanda. But other than that, I thought it was fun. I like Purple Homer Simpson.
Hmm. Thanos.
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 But, yeah.
Randy, do you like it?
My favorite characters.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. I don't have a giant hard-on for the Marvel movies, but but I'm looking forward to it. I'll watch it. I'll probably see it in the theater sooner or quicker, I guess, than I see Justice League. So,
thank goodness for that.
Feige made me a liar. Like he had said that Thor wasn't gonna have his eye. It was gonna have his eye back, and that's what I said on the podcast. And then, like first thing in the morning, I get like 3 texts. Hey, Thor's doesn't have his eye. I'm like, fuck.
Maybe he gets it fixed.
Maybe he gets that fixed.
Corrective surgery.
Yeah.
Bondo way.
They do that now. They have eye surgeries.
Face damage.
In fact, Will Ray, who was on our podcast a couple weeks during like Game of Thrones time, he's actually in Ethiopia right now doing eye surgeries for Ethiopians. Next slide. 10 days in Ethiopia doing eye surgeries.
That's cool.
Making an impact.
So everyone in America already has an eye. We got to go to other countries now. That's good.
It's good stuff.
We did it, guys.
Yeah, saving the world. I think that's fantastic.
It is. Eye patches are cool, though.
They are. Unless you have some flesh-colored one like that asshole on Battlestar Galactica. My God, I hated looking at his face. It drove me nuts.
Yeah.
What a dick. Who does that? Just put a Sharpie to it and make it black.
That show went off the fucking rails, man.
It really did.
Had like 2.5 like really good seasons, and then it just got weird.
Mm-hmm. Like when everyone became a Cylon, I didn't like that. And the court scenes, I wasn't into that either.
Oh, yeah. Baltazar, whatever his name was.
Guy's Baltar.
Baltar, yeah. When he was, like, accused, and then, like, Leodama had to, like, represent him.
Yeah, it's stupid. Whatever.
Is a man who represents himself as a fool for clients. So, what's that say?
But I am excited for Infinity War. I think it's going to be fantastic. A lot of people in it. We were talking about it earlier, in that you wish that they kept some of the characters a little bit behind the curtain, that they revealed too much, especially in the vein of, like, the Winter Soldier. We don't know if he's going to make some sort of appearance in Black Panther, or if they're just going to keep him frozen, and then they'll wake him up when shit goes down with these crazy monsters, these aliens in Wakanda.
The Black Army.
Yeah, it's crazy looking things. I mean, it's just a, you know, some sort of faceless monster that all of them would be able to just beat the shit out of for 45 minutes and it'd be fun.
Yeah, I think it's called, I think that's what it's called. I think it's called the Black Army. Like, they're an alien force.
Okay.
But it sounds weird that they're in Wakanda, though, and I feel that's, I must be wrong.
It looks like Wakanda.
I mean, unless... no, I mean the name of the army. It can't be the Black Order. That's what it was. Sorry.
Black Order. Black Order. Black Panther.
Mm.
Interesting.
I think it would be a cool post-credit scene for Black Panther.
Bomb out.
yeah, Black Panther, and then at the end, you know, Captain Cap and Falcon show up on Wakanda. And kind of say, hey, we need the popsicle or something like that. And then they thaw out Winter Soldier.
Sure.
And he looks at him like, what's the mission, Captain? Mm. But he wouldn't say that because they're buds.
Right. He'd be like,
he'll be like, I need your help, Bucky. He's like, anything for you, Steven.
He's like, and your arm. Your sweet new arm.
Yeah, I need that guy's arm.
Exactly. And that was fun, too, to see the Guardians of the Galaxy show up on Thor's little ship. And he's got that sweet mustache. He's got, like, the Burt Reynolds mustache going on. Star-Lord, that is.
Yeah, that the Comic-Con D23 trailer, that's how it opened, was the Guardians were flying through space, and they all of a sudden Thor rams into their windshield.
Oh, nice.
So I'm assuming that's going to be... Assuming that's going to be how the movie opens, and then maybe Thor will give like kind of like a backstory of what happened. Because in the trailer, we see Loki with the Tesseract, with the Cosmic Cube. And I'm assuming that he will give it to Thanos in a way to try to like save his own ass. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. Gotta wait till...
Yeah, and that was another one of the reveals. Because while in Thor Ragnarok, everyone assumed Loki pocketed the Tesseract, you know, we never really saw it. And so for them to show in the movie, obviously, is kind of an important reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Just seemed like an odd thing to show in the trailer.
I'm not worried about it.
I ain't worried.
I like to be excited.
I'm excited when you're excited.
Randy's...
Hearing about that makes me excited.
Oh, there we go. I was going to say, you're always lukewarm. I can't remember the last thing, other than the last non-Star Wars thing that really whet your whistle, Randy. Can you think of
anything? Blade Runner.
Oh.
Yeah, I liked Blade Runner a lot.
That's true. But were you, like, all jazzed up to go see it? Like, where you put on your Your dancing shoes?
No, I saw it at a cheap theater, like, see? Just before it left theaters, so...
See?
Yeah.
What was the last movie, besides Star Wars, that you were just so fucking stoked to see that you had to make sure that you were there on time, and that you combed your hair and combed your mustache, and you were ready to get there?
Oh, I can't even remember.
See?
Was it Spider-Man or Logan or Deadpool?
No, he's been lukewarm about all that shit.
Oh, you weren't lukewarm on Logan and Deadpool, were you?
Spider-Man I saw opening weekend. Logan, I'm pretty sure I saw opening weekend or a week later. I couldn't tell you what I saw opening weekend recently. Like in the last 6 months. Because you know why? It's because I like to avoid crowds. So it's
sure.
Like, if there's a movie that I want to see, like when Justice League came out, I don't remember what I saw that weekend instead, but...
You ended up seeing Thor and Blade Runner.
Yeah, Thor and Blade Runner. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Those are the last movies I've seen on the big screen.
Man, that's crazy. Because even Dunkirk, you know, you're a big sucker for World War II. And you were just sitting at home playing with your hand in your pants while me and Dave went and saw it. That's so funny. You weren't even like, yeah, Dunkirk, let's fucking go do it. You've just been so chill about everything lately. Maybe it's age. Maybe you're just over it.
You know, I spent a lot of my teens and my 20s, like, waiting in a lot of lines for a lot of movies. You know, we're talking, like... Well before the days of assigned seating and everything where
sure.
You had to show up 12 hours or 24 hours in advance if you wanted to get a decent seat, you know, for a midnight screening. That was before they did showings at 7 p.m. or 9 p.m. the day before it officially comes out. It was fucking midnight because they went by the goddamn rules. You know, it's like if opening day is Friday, it was 12:01, not 7 o'clock on a goddamn Thursday. You know, I'm starting to sound like an old man. Get off my lawn.
You are.
You realize that there are no rules. Like, I thought there was like a governing body. That it had to be midnight before you showed this film. But no, that's not the case at all. Yeah, now we're in the days of everywhere's reserved seating. I don't even go to any movie theaters that don't have reserved seating or reclining chairs anymore.
That's funny.
The way of the future.
The way of the future. But, you know, what's funny is the first time I ever saw a movie on a Thursday at like 7 instead of midnight going into Friday was Superman Returns with Randy. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude. I don't want to be waiting around all night long to see a movie and then get home at like 2:30. That shit sucks.
And it's an underrated classic that holds up remarkably well.
Yeah. Now it's got that guy in it, though. Frank Underwood.
Kevin Spacey?
It. Yeah.
And Bryan Singer directed it.
And Bryan Singer, yeah. It's a lot of touching. No touching!
Let's see if Weinstein's fingerprints are on that film somewhere. The trifecta.
Yeah, it's Bad News Bears. All right, then. It is worth noting, I don't know if we talked about it last week, but Bloodsucker Jones had a screening in Pasadena. That's exciting shit. A movie that you did.
Yeah, it was actually in Santa Ana.
Or Santa Ana, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super cool. It was a lot of fun. It was a full house. It was our cast and crew screening, but we also, there were a few open seats, so they let some fans of the first movie come in and see it, and it was kind of fun to gauge cast, or to gauge fan reaction. You know, it's always going to be really positive when you're going to a cast or crew screening, because everybody that worked on the movie, they're going to be laughing at all the right moments, or they're going to be laughing for a different reason because they'll remember what happened the day we shot a particular scene or something like that. But the true test is to see it with a bunch of strangers, which I haven't yet. But this is just partway full of strangers. But it was really neat. It was a lot of fun. Got to see the name of the movie up on a big marquee out in front of the theater. It's pretty cool. It's like a total classic movie theater with a proper marquee and just like a little two-room theater kind of thing.
Captain Blood's theater type thing?
It kind of like Captain Blood's was, yeah. You know, this didn't have like any of the cool balcony seating, but it has that non-stadium seating that you probably remember from your childhood in like the 90s or the 80s. You know, the long aisles, and there's just like the big center section and two little itty-bitty side sections. Oh, man, it was so cool, though. It was such a neat environment to watch the movie. It looked great, and it sounded great, and it's such a cool little theater. They had Bloodsucker Jones's face plastered, like they had this little projector in the lobby area. They had the shot of his face just up on the wall with all this like disco lights going on, and they were just playing this 70s funk music in the lobby while we were having people sign the poster and stuff. It was just like such a really neat kind of cool party environment. I dig it a lot. It's doing the festival rounds right now. I don't know when the next screening is off the top of my head, but when a few more pop up, I'll be sure to mention it on the podcast. Be sure to check it out. The first one is available to watch for free on YouTube, and I warn you, it's one of those things that's probably best watched while drunk or high or whatever, because it's a like really silly movie.
Sure.
The first one, the production values, let's say, they're not incredibly high, so it doesn't necessarily look cinematic. But the second one, I came in as the DP, the director of photography, so I made it my goal to make it just as silly, but this time make it way more cinematic looking. So
the first one is BVD, before Van Dyke.
Yeah. Although I did work on it for like 1 or 2 days, and there is a tiny, tiny cameo.
Oh.
Just the tip.
I like it.
So I have a tiny cameo in both movies.
But in the end, there is definitely a charm that comes with independent horror films, even silly ones. And I think that that's fantastic that you're a part of it, and congratulations to you and the entire cast and crew for getting that made and played on a big screen. That's just really cool.
Hey, thank you. Hopefully many more will come.
I always think of that Dead Before Dawn. Like, that's what I remind myself of when we watched that screening at Comic-Con a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
like 4 years, 5 years ago. Same thing, you know, it's a bunch of friends that got together to make this movie, and
Somehow they got Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, they got their star power in Christopher Lloyd. But it was fun. It was ridiculous and silly, but that's what makes it fun, is that adds that little charm to it. So I think that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you.
David, you got anything before we wrap this baby up?
Just that I got to be a guest on the Everything Geek podcast that Justin does with Tony Tolato, Rod Faulkner, and Tim Byers. I got to fill in for Tim and had a great time. So if you guys want to hear my thoughts on some other geeky stuff that we discussed and
the casting couch,
by my take on the casting couch and the current situation in Hollywood, and probably report me to the authorities, I recommend listening to it. I don't know when Tony's going to have it up, but when he does, I'll be sure to tweet it out so you can listen to my voice a little bit more.
I think he already has it up. He's fast.
Oh, shit. He doesn't fuck around. Mm-mm. It's already up, then.
Yeah. Good stuff.
I stand erected.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. That was fun.
I had a blast.
Mm-hmm. It's fun that there's always a negative Nancy, and in this particular podcast, it is Rod. Rod Faulkner, Seventh Matrix. We've got to have him back on the show. He's he's good times. You and he could go. He would be your partner in crime. You guys are both so anti everything awesome.
I told him you guys should go bowling together.
So funny.
As he was
create our own bowling league.
Yeah, there you go.
He's gonna have a shirt. Just call it like the negative Nancy's.
Yeah, there you go. The anti everything league.
Yeah.
AEL. Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Cool, man. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast there. Lots of fun. Remember to visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. David has been busy plugging away at the articles there. Lots of fun reads. And remember to listen to the Pixelated Podcast with Stephen K. James and myself, where we talk about what's going on in the world of video games. Last week, there were only 2 news stories, but we turned it into like a 90-minute show. It was amazing. And remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at Geek Legacy, and at Pixelated Pod. Thank you so much.